In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we're in the John 7 of A Storm of Swords. This chapter is touched by fire, wouldn't you say, Matt?
This is a tough chapter, man. We've been having them back to back. You kind of forget about John a little bit, right? Because he's up there in the north. And this is one of those things where, man, sometimes the POV read is better because if you're just reading John's chapter, it's like a race, right? I mean, everything's happening, you're racing, and then it just, you jump right into this. But at the same time, man, George had to fill out the Red Wedding and we had to go take a trip to Davos. Like, pacing, it's one of the things in the series where it's, oh man, you're just jumping around so much.
Yeah, for a huge book, this book always seems to fly by whenever I'm reading it. Normally, obviously, we do a chapter a week, so it takes just a smidge longer to get through it. But whenever you're reading it like any other book, that page count, for me at least, always feels like it's a lot smaller than it is. And yeah, John, a little bit forgotten, but we are back with him, and it is his turn to learn about tragedy and duty and love and all of the things George loves to talk about in his stories and put his characters through.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to talk a little bit about the show today, too, because kind of a small change in terms of what the way they actually go about it compared to the book, but just two different ways of viewing it. And we'll talk a little bit about that as to which you prefer, Jamie, because this was definitely different. But this is one of the coolest episodes in the show, especially early on, because they really expand the battle out compared to what actually happens in the books. And, you know, every time we talk about this, I love to bring it up because I would argue maybe the most underrated scene in all of Game of Thrones, the TV show, long before Hodor held the door, right? Few men of the Night's Watch down there holding the gate.
Yeah.
Sick, epic scene. It's good here in the book as well. Like the way they do it in the book is cool, just because Donald Noy, who's a character, is obviously
the man.
Who's the character who is not in the show. I always argue when people talk about characters who are missed from the show, right? Lady Stoneheart, young Griff. Man, I always want to bring up the idea of, I think Donald Noy is a big miss too. They gave actually Tyrion some of his stuff. He provides John with some words of wisdom there earlier that they gave to Tyrion in the show, but he's also a one-armed blacksmith, and he's the man who forged Robert Baratheon's Warhammer. But he's one of the men down there holding the gate. Yeah, one of the most underrated moments in the Game of Thrones TV show.
Yeah, kind of a feeling of a last stand of sorts, right? Like, is this going to be it for us? And yeah, Donald Noy is the man, by the way. I love Donald Noy, and very upsetting that he wasn't in the television show. So I'm with you on that.
Yeah, definitely. I think, could have used him. But nonetheless, we can go ahead and we can dive right in, because I don't think there's really any news today. So
yeah, I don't think there's any updates or anything, right?
Yeah, I think we're still just waiting for that. So Donald Noy and John have done the best they could to fortify Castle Black from the impending attack of the raiders. The castle along the wall were designed defenseless, as the Night's Watch was not meant to be able to repel a force from the south. Castle Black was meant specifically to be protected from the wildlings by the wall itself. When Styr, Magnar, and the Thens and his men attack, many of the defenders die, while John and Will they fire arrows from one of the roofs? At one point, John has Ygritte in his sights, but he cannot loose an arrow at her. Finally, Dominoi fires the powder kegs and he had placed along the lower staircase of the wall. The Magnar and the rest of his men perish as the staircase and a section of ice from the wall crushes them. Amidst the destruction, John finds Ygritte shot through the chest by a crossbow by someone else, and the woman he loved died in his arms.
Fairly dramatic.
Yeah, kind of different in the book compared compared to the show.
Yeah. Yeah, which do you prefer?
It's tough, actually. I think they're both good. I think the show might be better.
Can you remind me what the big difference is in the show? Because I remember, obviously, we just read the book one, but I haven't seen the show in a while. And I remember the moment Ygritte dies, because that's like seared into my brain because it's so good.
Well, it's Ollie, who is a character who does not exist in the show, yes, is the one who kills him. And he's like very proud because John had kind of been working with him a little bit. Right. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, in his mind, he's like, hey, I did it. Right. You know, I mean, but at the same time, it's troublesome. And then Ollie obviously ends up being one of the people who stabs John, and then he's the one, one of the people who gets hung. So you have it's part of it is wrapped around this character that only exists inside the show. So you have that piece of it too. But I don't know. There's more to it than in the books than in the. There's more to it in the show than there is in the books.
Yeah,
like in the books, it almost feels like Ygritte is just part. She's just kind of caught in the crossfire. But there's meaning to there's certainly meaning to both of it.
Yeah, I mean, I really do. Now that you mention, I remember Ollie. I certainly remember his later stuff more than I remembered this. But I actually really like that change. It's a cool character to add because John is kind of taken upon himself to develop this kid, to teach him his skill. And turns out that skill happens to be to kill, and he ends up killing the woman that John loves. So that's like an extra layer of tragedy, but also just conflict within John himself. So I'm not going to say that I like the show more, but I think that the adaptation of it being, well, let's make this character and really drive this home was a great decision for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The battle is also different in like the books and the show too, where the battle is like a huge deal in the,
I remember it being bigger I couldn't tell you a single detail outside of the very end with Ygritte.
It's a much bigger deal in the show, you know, where they're all climbing and everything, because they kind of speed up, actually, from what I remember. It's been a long time since I've seen it, but I think they speed up the whole Mance Rayder subplot, because remember now, like, actually this chapter does tie directly into the Davos chapter we just read, right? Mm-hmm. Which is Stannis deciding, you know, what he needs to do, and ultimately it's going to be come up to take on the Army of the Dead, right? And then John and Castle Black kind of pushes Mance Rayder back, and the, you know, in the battle with the whole, and then he ends up going and meeting him, and then the next thing you know, Stannis troops right in. So that's kind of where these paths are about to cross. So that's kind of where this whole thing is ultimately headed. And then John still has to learn about like what happened to Commander Mormont, right? And is there a new Lord Commander and everything, and all that's where we're headed for with all this. But so ultimately, I mean, it's tough for me when I think about the differences between the two, just because on one hand, there is the Ollie bit of it, where, well, I guess with both cases, ultimately, it kind of is John being thrust back into the Night's Watch life, really before he's ready, I'd argue.
Yeah, and also dealing with the fact that he feels like he's betrayed a lot of his oaths and his brothers, because he didn't necessarily hate his entire time with the Wildlings.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly. You still get the, like, you know, nothing Jon Snow, mm-hmm, bit of it either way, But it's different where he, in the show, he sees her get shot. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's almost more tragic because he's kind of almost in a way like got to her. And, oh, and then she's like taken from him, where here he more just kind of finds her.
I think this
part, it's just different.
I think this part's a little less. I don't want to use the word. I think the book version is probably more realistic. I don't love using that word, but probably right. is. And there is something about that dreaded search, right? Looking at the face of each dead person, being like, "Is that her? Is that her? Is that her?" Yeah. I mean, we see this all the time with like tragedies, right? And people just hoping, like wanting to find their loved one after a tragedy, but also they do not want to find their loved one because they right. know. If they're on the ground that something horrible has happened for them. So it's two different things, right? The visual medium really wants to cash in on the facial reactions. Two people they paid very handsomely, I imagine. That makes total sense to me. It's very dramatic. It's very intense. It's very intimate. Whereas in the book, there's almost this sense of dread because we're in John's POV, in his brain. It's like you could have done it that way in the book for sure, but maybe George wanted it to feel a little bit more, I don't want to say mundane, but like down to earth, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's just, and George's writing of this whole scene, and I'll read a little bit of it here too, because there's just so many good parallels about it. So ultimately after this battle is over and he's walking around, he's finding people. He found Court dead, Stone Thumbs dying, you know, some of the Fens he never truly knew. He found Ygritte sprawled across a patch of old snow beneath the Lord Commander's tower with an arrow between her breast. The ice crystals had settled over her face, and in the moonlight, it looked as though she wore a glittering silver mask. The arrow was black, John saw, but it was fetched with white duck feathers. Not mine, he told himself. Not one of mine, but he felt as if it were. When he knelt in the snow beside her, her eyes opened. John Snow, she said very softly. It sounded as though the arrow had found a lung. Is this a proper castle now, not just a tower? It is. John took her hand. Good, she whispered. I wanted to see a proper castle before I... You'll see hundreds of castles, he promised her. The battle's done. Maester Aemon will see to you. He touched her hair. You're kissed by fire, remember. Luckily, it will take more than an arrow to kill you. Aemon will draw it out and patch you up, and we'll get you some milk of the poppy for the pain. She smiled at that. Do you remember the cave? We should have stayed in that cave. I told you so. We'll go back to the cave, he said. You're not going to die, Ygritte. You're not. Oh, Ygritte cupped his cheek with her hand. You know nothing, Jon Snow, she said, dying. First of all, unbelievably great writing by George. I mean,
yeah, man.
And I love the comparison here, right? You're talking about ice crystals had settled over her face in the moonlight, you know, setting the tone, in a silver mask. So when you're looking at Ygritte, you're thinking of like white, right? You're mm-hmm. thinking, you know, when you think of like the color white and silver and everything, that's usually good. And then immediately the arrow was black. Right. Yeah. And that I think is going to ultimately come down to a huge thing for Jon Snow and a character development, right? Like the arrow that kills her is black, and he is one of the black, and that he has, you know, taken the black and everything. And it was this that took something that he actually loved, because Jon's character, you know, he's been a bastard his whole life. He's never really felt like he belonged. His stepmother, Catelyn Stark, wants nothing to do with him, hates him. Yeah. Right. I mean,
sure does.
She utterly hates Jon Snow. And while he certainly grows up and feels like he's a brother and everything, his whole thing is about being a bastard. So he finally has something, someone he truly loves. And this is like his life finally has purpose. Well, you know, it's taken away by a decision that he made. Like, he's the one who joined the Night's Watch. Before he was ready. Remember, that's what Benjen tells him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You don't know what you're giving away. Because you haven't, you don't realize how much life there is to live, and you're signing most of it away. I mean, the thing about John that can be kind of like infuriating, I guess, is that he's so black and white about everything. He mm-hmm. wants things to be one way or the other, which in some ways is very Ned of him, right? It's like Ned boiled down to like a really simple worldview. I think Ned, even with his faults, like can see the nuance in some things, maybe not enough, and that's why he's dead. But he's dead because other people are terrible, but
right.
I digress. So John is very black and white. And I think for him, you know, I go to the Night's Watch. It's a great thing. It's a studious thing to do. It's respectable. And then he finds out, well, the Night's Watch is actually full of a bunch of robbers and rapists and whatever else. Okay. Well, that's okay. I'm here. I'm going to make my oath and I'm going to do my very best and I'm going to lift up people around me. Okay. Well, now you're with the wildlings and now you have to kill Corn Halfhand. And to do the black and white thing of good, right? Like we're going to do something good. I actually have to do some awful things against what I've said. I actually have to contradict the vows that I've already taken. So he's thrown into a pretty wild situation with the Night's Watch and then immediately has to go against what he's learned there to survive with the wildlings to come back. And now we're seeing his two worlds literally crash together. And Ygritte is kind of the victim of those two worlds colliding. And yeah, I really like the whole silver white thing. And she kind of takes the black in this sense. And
yeah,
that black is an arrow. That's very symbolic, I think, of what taking the black will end up meaning for John overall, because it has been and will be a huge sacrifice. I think his failure also to find love or be able to love or love the right person is probably going to be something that plays up in the future. You and I have talked about Val a lot. I think that that's possible, that that's where Jon Snow's romance possibly goes. Another wildling princess, mm-hmm. very mysterious, by the way, that he could end up with. But yeah, Jon is very much the Faulkner quote of the human heart in conflict with himself, love and duty. It's all those things. And in some ways, very similar to Daenerys too, right? Like we know that they are probably the fire and the ice. I don't think George necessarily intends for them to be romantic together. He could. I don't think he will. But there is something about that where Dany, we see her have failed relationship after failed relationship. Maybe especially with Dario starting to love someone she shouldn't love and shouldn't trust. And there's a lot of parallels probably to be drawn with that of like, tons of responsibility at a very young age, being way out of your element, and then just happen to always seem to love the wrong person.
Yeah. You know, actually, if you bring up Dario, is pretty interesting because I think I actually thought the way they went with him in the show is pretty much exactly what's going to happen with him in the books, is that Dany is going to sort of love him and have to give him away. And it would be interesting if John and Val end up having a similar situation where he kind of has to give her away. Like she didn't, maybe she doesn't die. Of course she's going to Hardhome, could be totally different, but if it is something similar, then I think John and Dany are definitely getting together. Cause then their paths will have really met.
Yeah.
They'll be like parallel, just in opposite.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I think that their paths are going to cross for sure. I don't think it has to be romantic in the book, though. I think the television show, very much like seeing Ygritte before she gets shot, like they always went with the more dramatic of the two options. So what's even more dramatic than them meeting each other? Well, what if they fell in love? And I heard a quote somewhere that Dan and Dave had come up with the John and Dany romance themselves in like episode. They had decided that not only were they going to fall in love, but John would have to kill Dany in like season 3 or 4. So I'm pretty sure that is like a them invention. And in the points that George gave them for the end of the show, like none of that was mentioned. So I think there's like definitely a chance that there's not a romance there. And it's more of a family bond possibly, which would be interesting in many ways. Right. Because we know in the original outline, John is supposed to get with Arya. George went away from that. And now really a lot of us, and in this chapter, he thinks about Arya sticking with the pointy end. We're kind of waiting for those two to reunite because Arya and John think about each other a lot. So like he can have a reunion there, but he also is going to have a reunion with a family member that he doesn't know exists. And two, certainly doesn't actually, well, he might know she exists, but certainly doesn't know that he's a Targaryen and would be related. Right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, even if he were to get with Arya at the end of this whole thing, because, you know, obviously cousins marrying in this is not nearly as awkward. I mean, it's awkward for us, but it's not nearly as awkward as brother and sister.
I think it's awkward because he looked at her like a little sister. Like,
right. That's it's not, no. Yeah. It's more awkward in the Game of Thrones. Right. In the even in the universe itself, because, yeah, she's much younger. Right.
Yeah. I don't think George will do it. Thankfully.
You don't think he will?
No, because like the way it was supposed to happen, things were so different. Jaime sits on the throne. Yeah. Tyrion's at Winterfell with Sansa. Like, there's so much that has to happen. And that was, like, I believe, kind of a driving force with Jon and Arya. So I think abandoning that's probably a great idea, George. Let's not do that. I'm good.
Right. So with the difference between the book and the show, something that I was thinking about a little bit here is, I think this version, in John finding her, I think it adds way more weight to him, like, leaving the Knights, like him, like, mm-hmm. you know, leaving, like the scene where Ygritte has to shoot him, right, and everything. I think it adds way more to that, because then it feels like it gives that moment much, because that's it, right? Even if you look at the beginning of this, and I'm gonna read some of a quote here from a Reddit, you know, the Reddit thread. Because it is actually, I think, a very good summary of the beginning of this chapter. So, somebody
now at Menards, save big money on everything for your next project. Shop our huge selection of concrete, from general purpose concrete to specialty sand and mortar mixes. We have what you need to get any job done right. View our entire selection online or in store today and save big money. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
He said, people have pointed out that George has a tendency to start a chapter by describing real-time things like the Molestown smoke, and then flashing back to events in the recent past, John's decision with Don O'Noy regarding his role during the upcoming attack, and immediately returning to what he started the chapter with. And people are saying, you know, they're noticing it all the time now. And it kind of feels like when you get a new car and you start driving it and you suddenly begin to notice that, like, oh, well, this person has my car and this person has my car, but you never would before because you're not specifically, like, looking out for it. So they're saying it seems like we're being teased by John's thoughts, or potentially George is reading our minds, knowing we'll all probably love Ygritte and John. John is hoping she stays away, and so is the reader. The romantic idea of their love being preserved through the hardship of both their lives is enticing, albeit together impossible given the world they live in. George is framing us and putting us in a slight bit of hope in our minds, just like there is in John's. Full disclosure, they're saying, you know, I'm sure, you know, we as the reader now are all affected by the HBO version of the relationship, which expands it a little bit. And, you know, in our real world, we know that they actually do end up together. Right. Like that has definitely, I think, affected our John Ygritte reading of the book, because the actors are they're still married today. Right.
Yeah. Which, hey, and good for them.
Good for them. That doesn't happen a lot in Hollywood. But I don't know. I don't know how it works with, like, British actors. Maybe it's better for them than it is here in the United States, because it's, I don't know. But I don't know how British celebrity romances last compared to American ones, but American ones typically are not very good.
Well, we don't even have to say Hollywood. I mean, marriage in general doesn't.
Yeah, it's not.
The time it doesn't work out.
I think the rates actually have gone down a little bit.
No, have they?
Yeah, I think it's now down to like sub 50. It's no longer like 51.
It's expensive 52. To get divorced. Can be.
Jeez. Yeah. Yes, it is. Okay. Continuing on here, so. Certainly, some people argue that it might be one of the best couples we read in the book. Way better, obviously, than Shay and Tyrion or Rob and Jane Poole. She doesn't have much screen time. Anyway, in the end, it's devastating to read John's final words to your Gret as she dies. He even mentions the sound of her voice and tells him, you know, we're told through him that an arrow probably pierced her lung, but he pleads with her desperately to hold on so that Aemon can heal her. But deep down, he probably knows she's going to die. I imagine him weeping as this happens, even though it isn't mentioned. And then it goes on a little bit here. Say, John is very intense during this battle. He hardly flinches, if at all. When dead Dick Fowler dies, he barely notices when arrows hit their mark and the scarecrow crows right next to him. John has already been hardened by war already. To be honest, you lose a little bit of the image of John limping around with a bum leg for most of the time, even though George specifically mentions John limping in the battle. To me, reading it almost mirrors the effect of adrenaline. I read this chapter very quickly because of the action of the battle and lost track of some of the things. John's limp, just like I imagine John would, you know, during the heat of a life or death situation.
Yeah, it definitely goes by as a blur, and John is, and that's the thing, like, we're in John's head, which is totally different than an omniscient POV of what we get in the television show, even if he is the main character. So everything comes through his lens, and I actually think it's even more tragic that way in many regards. So I just think of Ygritte firing the arrow at him whenever he's getting away, and of course didn't land, didn't kill him, and now one lands on her. It's like,
from her perspective.
Yeah, man. It's just so brutal. It's so brutal. The one final, you know, nothing, Jon Snow.
Right. And, exactly. Yeah. From her point of view, because this, you know, the free folk, as we like to call them here.
That's right.
We know, I don't like that term wildling. We prefer the term free folk. Okay.
That's right.
Get your Southern propaganda out of our podcast, okay?
That's right. Mailers.
Yeah. No. So, you know, yeah, from her point of view, I mean, all the free folk, right, are trying to go south because they're scared of the White Walkers and the others, and they know the true hardships that exist beyond the wall. And I'm sure, you know, it's not like they actually, I mean, well, some do, like the Thens and stuff like that, but a lot of them just want to get out before winter comes because they know what truly lies beyond there. And so from Ygritte's point of view, she has also not really found love, right? Like, and the way they do it up there is you need to meet somebody that sort of is like you view as your equal. And it seems like she's finally found that with John. And she doesn't care that he's a member of the Night's Watch, or that doesn't mean anything to her, you know. And then he betrays her. And then she's killed.
And dies in his arms. So
we always, we always view it from John's point of view. Yeah, but from her point of view, it's even more heartbreaking. Literally,
it's heartbreaking. But look at her reaction in the moments when she's facing death. She's pretty brave in this moment.
Oh yeah,
like she went and she attacked. I mean, the wildlings did something extraordinarily brave. One, like whether they succeed or not, super brave. She was there, and probably looking for revenge, but maybe wouldn't mind have had a conversation with John possibly, but. It's in her last moments you kind of see the difference between her and John, and the phrase, you know nothing, Jon Snow, really does mean like you know nothing about like the life that I've lived, right? Because she's staring death in the eye very bravely.
Yeah.
And has been around her whole life. I mean, and she has seen some crazy things beyond the wall. And you have Mr. Idealistic, I believe in the black and white, everything's good or evil, Jon Snow. And in this moment, he's talking about saving her and all this stuff. And she's already accepted it. Like she's already known. And he knows too, deep down, but she's already faced it and kind of moved on in a way and then moves on permanently when she dies. But it really is kind of an effective, you know, nothing Jon Snow to end it all, because he really just has no idea what the world has in store for him.
Yeah. And her mission is huge. Like she still, and that's something else. Like, she doesn't just give up right then and there and like, all right, well, you know, this guy broke my heart. Like their mission is extremely important, because it's the thing that would allow, you know, Mance Rayder and everybody to finally push through.
They have no options.
They have no option, because without her, right, like all the wildlings, all the free folk, all the tribes could die.
And isn't it weird that the wildlings who are, and this goes into John saying, you know, he always shrugs off the you know nothing, because he kind of thinks that she's a bit of a savage, even though he's seeing proof of the exact opposite as their relationship kind of oddly grows when they're together. And in this moment, of course, the quote unquote savage actually understands the situation better than he does. But the wildlings, who are, you know, free folk, I should say, my bad, they can band together for the greater good of all of the free folk, while not imposing any kind of real structured society. Even kneeling under Mance Rayder is very rare, right? They've had a couple other attempts of people to lead them, but never really works out. But it kind of shows how dire the situation is. But isn't it ironic that these people that the Southerners hate, think they're savages, are actually banding together to face and to escape this existential threat, whereas the Seven Kingdoms, the civilized, they can't come together at all. Mm-hmm. They can't. There is no greater good. It's all about how can I make this situation better for me.
Yeah. Hey, we saw that. We see that in America. That's what
That's what I was thinking.
That's, you know, Native Americans. Tecumseh. He rallied all those people together.
Yeah.
He gave them a run for their money. I mean, it didn't work in the end, but yeah.
I've been watching a bunch of history from like 1500 to 1700 in America, and it's just like crazy.
Not particularly crazy, great. Dude. Yeah.
No, it's certainly not.
Yeah, it's not. Hey, let me read a little bit more here. So this is like the fourth or fifth, I guess, ish paragraph. So he says he could feel the throb of pain where her arrow had gone through the meat and muscle of his thigh. He remembered the old man's eyes too, and then the black blood rushing from his throat as the storm cracked overhead. But he remembered the grotto best of all, the look of her naked in the torchlight, the taste of her mouth when he opened under his. Ygritte, stay away, go south and raid, go hide in one of those run down towers you like so well. You'll find nothing here but death.
A lot of weight to those words.
Yeah, Georgia sets us up right at the beginning to be like, yeah, just FYI, this is, you know, how it's gonna go.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so then they talk a little about the scarecrow sentinels. With Donald Noy, he calls them one of the crows. John mused, and most of us were scared enough. So they talk a little bit like some of the traps that they're setting up, right? These straw soldiers. Okay. Then they attack them, and it kind of can pull away some of the firing and everything. But yeah, early on, you get a lot of Donald Noy, you know, them talking, like you said, he talks about Arya just a little bit. He thinks about it. He says, I have the need of every man who knows which end of the spear to stab into the wildlings, the pointy end, John had told his sister, something like that once, he remembered. Noy rubbed the bristle on his chin. Might be you'll do. We'll put you on a tower with a longbow, but if you bloody well fall off, don't come crying to me. Such a cool character, Donald Noy.
Yeah, Donald Noy just leading when no one else can. You gotta love him.
Yeah. So yeah, a lot of this chapter is just planning for the attack, and then obviously we get it here. So I'll try to jump ahead a little bit about there. But yeah, other thoughts, Jimmy, here.
The internal thoughts John has pretty much the entire time, knowing that he's not 100% ready to defend with his injury, but also just constantly thinking about how he's a bastard and how he's no good. Like, there is a lot of doubt in Jon Snow here. And at the root of it, I think, comes from his heart being tugged in two different ways, but he doesn't really want to admit it to himself, as he just blames everything on being a bastard. It's like, well, yeah. No, it has really nothing to do with you being a bastard. It has everything to do with the fact that you're conflicted.
Yeah. Okay, so I'll do a little bit of battle here. So the battle was on the steps. Noy had put spearmen on the two lowest landings, but the headlong fight of the villagers had panicked them, and they had joined the flight, racing up toward the third landing, with the Thens killing anyone who fell behind. The archers and crossbowmen on the higher landings were trying to drop shafts over their heads. John knocked an arrow, drew, and loosed, and was pleased when one of the wildlings went rolling down the steps. The heat of the fires was making the wall weep, and the flames danced and shimmered against the ice. The steps shook to the footsteps of the men running for their lives. Again, John notched and drew and loosed, but there was only one of him and one of Satin. Is it, how do you say that guy's name? It's not Satan. S-A-T-I-N.
Satin.
Satin. I forget how it was. I forget how what's his name pronounced it.
He probably did it wrong anyway, so don't worry.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Anyway, and a good 60 or 70 Thens pounding up the stairs, killing as they went. Drunk on victory on the fourth landing, three brothers in black cloaks stood shoulder to shoulder with long swords in their hand, and the battle was joined again briefly, but there was only three, and soon enough the wildling tide rushed over them, and their blood dripped down the steps. A man is never so vulnerable in battle as when he flees, Lord Eddard had told John once. A running man is like a wounded animal to a soldier. It gets his bloodlust up. The archers on the fifth landing fled before the battle even reached them. It was a rout, a red rout. So yeah, the battle was not going their way, but thankfully, there was like a trap they'd set up. So I'll pull up some more of that, skipping ahead just a little bit here, because as John is just up there and he's just firing arrow after arrow, right? Again, John said again and again, other longbowmen were firing too. Above them, another fire was blooming. The old wooden steps had drunk up like oil, like a sponge. Donanoy had drenched them from the ninth landing all the way down to the seventh. John could only hope that most of their own people had staggered up to safety before Noy threw the torches. The Black Brothers at least had known the plan, but the villagers had not. Wind and fire did the rest. All John had to do was watch. With flames below and flames above, the wildlings had nowhere to go. Some continued upward and died. Some went downward and died. Some stayed where they were. They died as well. Many leapt from the steps before they burned and died from the fall. 20-odd Thens were still huddled together between the fires when the ice cracked from the heat, and the whole lower third of the stair broke off, along with several tons of ice. The wall defends itself, he thought.
And, it does, doesn't it? And also you think about all the history that's been at this wall all over time, like how many lives have been lost and wildlings coming. It is a kind of a remnant of time. It's just viewing it all. Also, the wall was magical. We tend to forget that this is a fantasy series. By the way, this ice wall seems to have magic properties.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's it. I mean, they had a plan. They went in, and that's really the chapter. It's kind of a shorter chapter actually for the battle, that itself. And I'm trying to remember now, actually, I think the show like kind of combines this with like Mance Rayder's attack. I think it combines it all into like one episode.
I'd have to go back and watch, man. I really just do not. I couldn't. Is this season three or four?
This would be that's a good question,
because I just don't recollect it very much outside of Yrgret's death.
Because I think it's combined, if I had to remember correctly, because then Mance's army is still approaching is the next chapter we're going to get into, and then they arrive
episode 9.
Season 4. So then it's like you kind of get a break as they get ready, and then they're going to come back, and then John is brought before Alistair Thorne, and that's where they have like the conversation, right, about like, oh, you kind of betrayed us and all this stuff. And so just looking ahead, so John 10 is when Val and Mance Rayder and everything. Stannis. So I think they kind of combine. I think they kind of combine some of the, or no. Because Mance Rayder. I'm totally sounding stupid here. No, because John goes and he meets with Mance Rayder.
Yes.
Because Mance Rayder is getting ready to press the wall. And that's when Stannis shows up. But so I guess they just make the battle is just bigger in the show.
Yeah, and it all comes down to the same points, right? And there's something about that quote about the cave, right? Do you remember that cave? We should have stayed in that cave. I told you so. We'll go back to the cave. You're not going to the guy. You regret. You're not. Oh, you know nothing, Jon Snow. And it's kind of a... do you think the cave is a little bit of a call to the Plato's allegory of the cave?
What do you mean?
Like, so the whole allegory of the cave is like that if you're in a cave, like you do not know what else is out there. And I'm butchering this, by the way. I'm not like a philosopher, but it's the whole idea that it's like a effect of education and the lack of it in our nature. So like we only know what we can know while we are in that cave. Right. And in many ways, like John is kind of stepping out of the cave and seeing the ramifications of like what's happening. I'm reaching a little bit here, but yeah. But the whole cave thing, John learning something here. I don't know. I wonder if George had that in mind at all. And that that John is kind of stepping out of one cave into a much bigger world. That's way harsher than he ever realized.
Yeah. Okay. So I yes, I think so. Yeah. And so I pulled it up just because I wanted to be sure. Cause I was like, my timeline's not adding up correctly here. Yeah. So the next chapter is essentially the other part of the battle. And that's where the other part of the army approaches.
Yeah.
And that's where the hold the gate. That's where the hold the gate is.
I got you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then but the show just combined those two moments.
Yeah. And a more succinct definition of Plato's allegory is it represents the world of illusion and perception, which does not always reflect the reality of truth. It's an escape from ignorance. And obviously Ygritte is saying, you know nothing, Jon Snow, because he is so very ignorant of the things around him. So I maybe it's not as big of a reach as I thought, but I thought that was kind of cool. It's on my mind.
That's okay. Okay. Well, that is it for us for this week. I think we're actually kind of like an episode ahead.
Yes, we are.
In terms of where we're recording, because I have to take a week off, but I don't know if we will get an episode on for that first week in June.
Yeah.
So regardless, the next time we are back, it should be a Storm of Swords, Chapter 56, Bran 4.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheknee.podcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.